Well, once again, it is a Monday morning, and once again, it's time to bring in Arthur Schwartz for one of our most popular, if not most popular, features that we have on Robinhood Radio, which is Arthur Schwartz. Arthur, it's nice to speak to you this morning.
Good morning. Good morning. We obviously did not do, I think the audience knows, we didn't do live programming last week. So it gave me a chance the week to calm down about what I'm going to talk about today, which is, as my grandmother never said, it's a new world. And I'm having a little, at my age, a little trouble adapting to the new world. But in language especially, a lot of, I cringe at a lot of things, and then I say some things that nobody gets anymore. For instance, oh, I rang her up. What does that mean? Nobody rings up anybody anymore. And another one, this really hurts my ear, but nobody uses the word fewer anymore. It's always less, even when fewer is the correct word. It's a word that's just disappeared from the language. Now, just the other day, bringing this to food, I noticed, I guess this, I don't know where it was online, but somewhere online, I read that Barney Greengrass, which is a restaurant slash appetizing store. Here I go, I'm going to use the word appetizing store, on the Upper West Side, cited as the best delicatessen in New York. So apparently, and I knew this for a while, that the distinction between appetizing and delicatessen has been lost. Now, it's not lost, by the way, to people who keep the Jewish dietary laws, which is called Kashrut, because those two different types of businesses, stores, are a necessity because of the Jewish dietary laws. So let me explain. Let me start at the beginning. The dietary laws, which by the way are outlined in Leviticus in the Old Testament, include a lot of laws. And depending on how observant you are, you abide by some or as many as there are, let's say. Anyway, a big thing is you're not allowed to eat dairy products, meaning things derived from the cow and the goat and the sheep, at the same meal as you have meat. Vegetables go either way, so other foods go either way. For instance, fish and eggs. Those, they go either way foods are called parev, parevE, which means they're neither meat nor dairy. You're vegan. By the way, a lot of young observant Jews become vegan, or even or in the old days, vegetarian, because you're almost automatically following you are automatically following kosher, vegan or vegetarian, because there is no meat to contend with, no poultry. If you're a pescatarian, you have fish, but anyway, you can have fish. So, in fact, I would say that some less observant people, they go out to eat in a mainstream restaurant, they would often order fish and vegetables because there's nothing not kosher about it. It may have been, who knows what kitchen went near it. But anyway, because meat and dairy need to be separated, it developed, and we're talking about the late 19th century here in New York, two kinds of food stores. One sold meat and all the things that go with meat, and the meat being pastrami and corned beef, salami, all cured meats. They also, a good delicatessen, they'd also have some roast beef or tongue. That was a big item in the delicatessen. And that was a fresh, not smoked. It could be smoked, though. Usually it was just boiled tongue, sliced, eaten cold on a sandwich, or not on a sandwich. Anyway, that's the delicatessen. and it's a German word meaning delicacies. Essen is eat. So it's, these were delicacies. Of course, in New York City and eventually the US, it wasn't so much delicacies, nothing special. It was, in fact, everyday food. So the other place where you get lox or smoked salmon, cream cheese, and other cheese, and other fish, white fish, a sable, which is actually black cod, goes by both names. A lot of people today know it as black cod because it became a very popular fish in Japanese restaurants after what's his name? He's all over the came up with this black cod dish. Anyway. That is called, it was called, an appetizing store. I was talking to my old radio wife the other day, who's, believe me, I'm old, she's older. And she immediately said appetizing store because that's what we called those stores. Nowadays, that word seems to have disappeared. I think I see the word appetizers, and it's not the same thing. Appetizing was the various smoked and pickled fish. Herring was a big one. You go to Russ and Daughters, the iconic store on Houston Street, downtown Manhattan, the longest running, oldest living. Oh, I hope that noise is not coming through. They're doing some serious work underneath my office here. Did you
No, it's
hear that?
okay. It's
Okay.
no, it's okay.
They're drilling or something. They're putting in a new laundry room. In any case, that Russ and Daughters is one of those stores, and you could probably know at least three, four, five kinds of herring, those little smoked fish, which we call chubs. And I don't know why this ever happened, but the appetizing store was also where you went to get nuts and dried fruits. If you go to Russ and Daughters, they still sell nuts and dried fruit. And there just aren't many appetizing stores. There are bagel cafes, though. And a bagel cafe is a place where they sell bagels if they don't actually bake them, but most of them do bake them, good or bad. They bake bagels. They have an array of bagels. When I was a kid, there was no array. Plain sesame, poppy seed, onion, and garlic. That's it. I think even an onion and garlic wasn't everywhere. Certainly, there was no cinnamon raisin. In any case, a bagel cafe is centered around the bagels, but they have all these things that you can put on a bagel or eat with a bagel. My friend Shelley Fireman, who owns a slew of restaurants in Manhattan, we think was the first person ever to sell a bagel sandwich. He had a bagel place, I would say it was in the early 60s, in what we now call Kips Bay. And he made bagel sandwiches. My grandfather, who ate bagels every Saturday, he on his way home from work, which ended midday, he would bring home a bag of freshly baked bagels, and he would make sandwiches, salami sandwiches particularly, on a bagel. But nobody made sandwiches on bagels because they had a hole in the middle. It didn't seem appropriate to actually make a sandwich. But anyway, nowadays people have sandwiches on bagels. I'm not sure how they chew them or bite into them. I'm old, my teeth aren't the best. But the fact is, maybe that's why so many bagels now are too soft for my teeth. Speaking of things changing. But And I've read criticisms of my favorite bagel bakery here in Brooklyn, which is called the Bagel Hole, and it's in Park Slope on 7th Avenue and 12th or 13th Street. And that bagel bakery gets criticized because it's a bakery. It's not a cafe. It's an old-fashioned bagel bakery. All they do is bake bagels and sell bagels. And yes, they have cream cheese of various flavors, the schmear onto the bagels. But if you want anything beyond that, it's in the refrigerated case. It's all packaged goods. And people say, oh, well, you know, the bagels are good, but you can't sit down and eat it. Well, you know, it's a bakery. You can't go into most bakeries and sit down and eat the cake either. Got to have, in fact, in New York City, I'm sure, I know, got to have totally different permits to do that. So that would be an expense. But anyway, Phil Romero, who is the owner and chief baker at Bagel Hole, is not about to do that. Anyway, back to appetite. So I read this, that Barney Greengrass is the best delicatessen in New York. And it's not a delicatessen. Barney Greengrass is what we used to call an appetizer. But you can sit down, and I'm not sure if they have waiter service or you got to go pick it up. And also after COVID, things have changed. I mean, one of my favorite places in the neighborhood here doesn't have waiter service anymore. You go up, you order at a counter, and somebody brings it to your table. But that's as far as the service. Well, I shouldn't say that. I was going to say that's as far as the service goes. But the truth is, service couldn't be friendlier, nicer, or more helpful. They'll help you to your table with a drink even. Anyway, but the point is, after COVID or since COVID, staffing in restaurants and service places has been a problem. So I'm not sure if Barney Greengrass has a service anymore. But it is a wonderful place to go. It's on Amsterdam and 84th Street. And we bought a lot of things. When I say we, my family, when I was a kid, we bought a lot of things at the appetizing store. And my father was a connoisseur of appetizing. He would go clear across Brooklyn to go to Acme Smokehouse to buy things. And another smokehouse that he liked to go to, buy things direct from the smokehouse. Acme, by the way, is the largest smokehouse in America. And almost everything, look at the packages of smoked and pickled fish and jars of herring in the supermarket, most of them are packed. Anyway, we had things in the neighborhood. My favorite name for these was Jaime's Highway Appetizer. Jaime's High Grade Highway Appetizer, HHH. And it was on King's Highway and 17th or 18th Street in here in Brooklyn, my old neighborhood. Not that that was our regular place. It wasn't. But I always loved the name. And they had good enough stuff. I think whatever it is now, they still sell bagels. Now, what's interesting, I think, about bagels is that we think of today that bagels automatically go with cream cheese and lox, which, by the way, these days, most lox is not lox. Most lox smoked salmon. Lox is simply, without smoke, salt-cured salmon. Smoked salmon is smoked. Nova Scotia was the only one that I knew of 5 years ago, but now there's smoked salmon from all different, including Scotland, which I love. Anyway, we think that, but years ago, now let's see, 20 years ago, I interviewed one of the daughters named in Russ and Daughters, the appetizing store that's still on Houston Street on the Lower East Side. By the way, Russ and Daughters also has a cafe in the Jewish Museum and another cafe on Houston Street, I believe on Houston Street, down the street from the actual store. So you can go visit, go to the restaurant and spend your week of salary and then go to the store and take home stuff a week of very expensive. But all these things are expensive anywhere you buy them. These things, but they're more expensive. In any case, Russ and Dor, all those things didn't always go together. So about 20 years ago, I interviewed one of the daughters, as in Russ and Daughters, who was already in her early 90s and living in Florida. I'm friends with her son. That's why entree to her. And she explained that when she was a young woman, they didn't sell bagels at Russ and Waters. Nobody ate
bagels. This meeting is being recorded.
No, did you hear that? We're being recorded, Marshall.
Yes, I know.
No, she said that everybody ate their lox, their cream cheese, the various fish, the other cheeses that they sold, ate that on either pumpernickel or what we called cornbread, but it wasn't cornbread. It was a sourdough rye, a very damp, sour rye bread. I love this bread. I still miss it. It's still made. Or Washers makes a version of it, but it's still not the same. Because you know what? Tastes have changed. I don't think anybody would really love that sour. Well, maybe they would. Sourdough bread is a thing these days. So maybe they would like sour rye. We just haven't had an opportunity to have it. But yeah, so all those appetizing items used to go with those breads. It wasn't until the 1930s, said Mrs. Fetterman, her name, that bagels became a thing to have with your lox and cream cheese. And the reason was Al Jolson, at the time, who had a radio show sponsored by Kraft, he popularized bagels and cream cheese. Kraft had just bought a company that made Philadelphia cream cheese. And he wrote a song called Bagels and Yaks. So Bagels and Yaks became a big hit, as did the combination of bagels and lox. And I still love lox, but I understand that because it's salt. And my father didn't cook very much. One thing he did cook was lox, eggs, and onions. And he knew how to saute an onion to make it beautifully sweet and golden. And then the lox, which was quite salty and relatively inexpensive, he would soak in milk. He would cut it into pieces and then soak the pieces in milk, which would desalt the lox so it wasn't so salty when you put it in. And then that's it, eggs and the soaked lox, and you make scrambled eggs. It's delicious. It's one of my favorite things. And many years ago, when I reviewed Ratner's on the Lower East Side, no, it doesn't exist anymore, big dairy restaurant, where that was an item, big item, lox, eggs, and onions. Later days, it was called the Leo, which I never used that expression. Anyway, Leo. I criticized them because they had lox and eggs, but if you wanted the onions, you had to pay a couple dollars extra. It's ridiculous. You're paying extra for the onions, which cost nothing. Anyway, so that was a big, by the way, I'm sure you can get very good lox, eggs, and onions at Barney Greengrass. And I also do recall that is a dish that they sometimes served at a delicatessen, even though it was not a meat dish, because eggs are parve, I explained what that means. And so is the fish. And of course, the onions. But for me, it's not a dish that I would eat in a delicatessen because I like it cooked with butter. And you can't use butter, a dairy product, in a real delicatessen centered on meat. In general, I gravitate to the delicatessen more than the appetizers, although I certainly could go for a bagel with good schmear. But, you know, I buy it at my bagel bakery, Bagel Hole. But a lot of the items that they sold in the delicatessen are now considered delicatessen food, which bothers me because we ate some of those things at home. We never ordered them in a delicatessen. I'll give you an example and I'll give you a recipe because it's something I crave. And that's kasha varnishes. Did you ever have your grandmother ever make kasha varnishes, Marshall?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And my father, by the way, who didn't cook, used to make lox, eggs, and onions.
It is definitely a dish for the guys who didn't cook. And also, it was breakfast, so a lot of daddies did have to feed their kids on a weekend, you know. We, by the way, we used to have a big feast on Sunday with my grandparents who lived downstairs. We would all get, my father may have had a little snack earlier, early in the morning, Maybe he gave us a snack too. But around 10 o'clock, my grandparents would come up and we would all eat together on Sunday. And we would have appetizers that my father had shopped for. But Kasha Varnishkas is kasha, which is buckwheat groves, mixed with bow tie, I'm going to call it pasta. The problem with the making it these days, only one little problem, is that I like it myself, made with egg pasta. And you have to, I find, go to a kosher supermarket, find egg bow ties. I have them in the house. I keep them in the house. I think Manischewitz still makes them, and that can be found in some supermarkets. Anyway, the varnishkas part are the bow ties. And the kasha itself is buckwheat groats, and it comes in, every supermarket sells it, but it comes in different granulations. The fine granulation is not really appropriate for varnishkas. You need to have medium or coarse. The whole is not so appropriate either. Medium or coarse kasha. It's a very quick cooking grain. So it's something that when I was a kid, my mother and my grandmother made frequently. Well, loved it. And it wasn't necessarily with the noodles. It could have been for its own sake. And its own sake went with various meat, but especially with pot roasted meat. Didn't have to be a brisket. Some kind of, you know, braised meat, because the braised meat would give off a lot of juices, and maybe even there were vegetables in the pot. And those vegetables and those juices were sublime on a pile of kasha. But kasha varnishkas doesn't need that. Now, to make, I make a large quantity when I make it, because it does stay in the refrigerator for several days, and it reheats extremely well, especially for a grain. Soggy. It will build if you use fine. Anyway, I flavor my kasha varnishkas mainly with onions. And if you want to make a really rich kasha varnishkas, you can use beef broth or chicken broth to cook it in. But in fact, the onions provide a lot of flavor. So I'm a pound of onions, I would say diced or sliced, either way, fried in at least, I don't know, 2 or 3 tablespoons of fat. If you happen to have chicken fat, don't, oil is fine. I wouldn't do butter here. Oil or chicken fat. And then saute the onions until they're really caramelized, meaning really dark. You want really, I mean, I always say Jewish cooking depends on onions, from raw to burn. These you don't want burned, but you do want them nice and dark. Take the onions out, leaving behind the oil, and degrease, deglaze the pan that you fried the onion in with water. If you're going to use broth, use broth. Put it in the pan, bring it to a simmer, scrape up the flavor from the bottom of the pan, and even if you're using water, that's a lot of flavor. You're going to want to season that with salt and pepper. And to make the actual kasha, you're going to need 2 cups of broth or liquid. Is it 2 cups? No, sorry, 4 cups. You need 4 cups of liquid for 2 cups of kasha. Now, kasha can clump together if you don't do this first step, which is beat up an egg. With 2 cups of kasha, 1 egg, pour it over the kasha, mix it all up, put it in the pan you're going to cook, a skillet, well, a deep skillet, where you're going to cook the kasha later, and dry it out over medium heat. You're going to, this kasha will start to smell, the pieces which are all clumped together from the egg will start separating, and it, when it's all separate, then you can put in your 4 cups of broth. Hot or not, I'm sloppy, you know, this is it up, and cover the pan. And the kasha, usually, as soon as the as it starts heaving, the kasha starts heaving in the pot. Lower the heat, put the cover on, 7-8 minutes at most, you have kasha. That's it. That you mix with bow ties. I would say you're going to be about 4 ounces of bow ties for that amount. Could be as much as 8 ounces of bow ties already cooked. Mix it with the cooked kasha, and that's kasha varna cheese. It's not a big deal. You don't have to go to a restaurant. And in fact, as I said, it reheats extremely well. And all those onions make for a delectable grain dish. So, anyway. You know, these calls always makes me hungry. So the fact is, I've already I've already measured out the kasha, knowing I was going to be craving kasha today. And Bob Harnett is off having major dental work now. And it dawned on me after he left that, you know, he probably could still eat kasha because it's soft enough. It's something we really love. And you don't have to go to a delicate. And by the way, I don't render schmaltz very often these days. Maybe for Passover, I'll get some chicken fat and render it into schmaltz, rendered chicken fat. But I do make chicken broth frequently. And if you skim off the fat, hardened fat from your chicken broth the day after you've made it, you've got what I call soup schmaltz. And soup schmaltz has a large content of moisture in it, but it wouldn't hurt to put it in with your onions or to add a spoonful or two to the liquid that you're using to make your kasha bun. Adds a lot of.
Oh, it deepens the flavor incredibly. Yeah.
Yeah, you know, and I, you know, I'm all for not wasting anything, so that's not wasting that. I do save that fat, by the way. I use that fat when I make matzo balls, because in the case of matzo balls, the moisture from the fat is okay. You're adding moisture to the matzo balls anyway, so and they add a couple spoons of soup schmaltz. By the way, the word schmaltz does mean chicken fat, but it also means any kind of poultry fat. And the fact is, I grew up with both chicken fat and my other grandmother, who was more Hungarian, she made goose fat. I don't remember ever eating goose at my grandmother's house. But as my grandfather would tell you, a goose is only good for two people. So they would render the fat, they being my grandfather, was also a cook. Me and my grandmother would do the fat, but they would eat the goose. And I benefited. One of the things I remember, I just made this the other day, but with butter, is breadcrumbs fried in goose fat and then put on and heated with already cooked cauliflower. That's one of my favorite comfort foods. And it's only cauliflower. Okay, Marshall.
All right. Well, you know, it's funny when you bring this up because I save whenever I make chicken soup, I always save the rendered fat for that. And my friends initially asked me, "What are you saving that for?" And I said, "Oh, you got to taste it."
Yeah.
I said, "I'll spread some of this on toast for you."
Absolutely.
Said, "It's a..." Yeah.
So well, you just reminded me. I love it on rye bread toast with a smear of schmaltz, and reminding me, speaking of taste changing and world changing, but I buy a really good Jewish style rye bread at a kosher bakery in Midwood called Isaac's Bakery, Avenue J, and I guess that's like 18th Street, 17th Street. It's down the block from that infamous pizzeria. I won't even mention the name, but anyway, I went in and I said, "You know, for a change, I think I want a rye with seeds." He says, "I don't make a rye with seeds anymore." And how could that be? No more caraway seeds? He says, "Nobody wants caraway seeds anymore." So he says, "I'll make it for you on special request." Sure, I could sell a few, but that's not what people want. So, and you have to sell what people want. Otherwise, you don't sell anything.
It's not rye bread unless it has seeds. I'm sorry.
Well, let me say, Ohrwacher's bread, they make a very good Jewish-style rye bread. And it's sold right, it's in Manhattan, I forget what street. But they sell Ohrwacher's breads at the supermarket around the corner from me. And I bought a rye bread of theirs recently. And I have to say, it had too many caraway seeds. If anybody's all coming right into Manhattan and they want a really seedy rye bread, try the Ohrwacher's.
Okay.
All right, so, Arthur. But anyway, we're having kasha varnishes, with which you don't eat bread because the kasha is already your bread, so to speak.
All right. Well, we've got next week. Anyway, we'll get together.
I hope you're feeling better.
I am, and I hope it stays there.
Yeah, okay, good. You sound okay.
All right, Arthur.
All right, take care.
Take care. Speak to you next week.
Yes, sir.